relatives told police that she actually hadn't been seen since 2011. She was just 13 years old when she disappeared. At the time, adoptive parents said she went to stay with relatives in Asheville and had not seen her since.
Steve and Janet Parsons tried to keep their emotions in check as they looked upon the photo of their granddaughter, Erica. They've not seen her for the last year, but never thought the girl who was adopted at birth by Steve's son could be in trouble till they learned of the police investigation that started just last week.
That's my fear, is something happened and nothing, nobody's telling us. I'm not talking about the law, I'm talking about my boy and my daughter-in-law.
And why did her brother decide to go to the cops and tell them that Erica was murdered by her adoptive family and buried in the backyard?
Where the heck is Nan? Something happened to this child. They know what happened to the child, and it's up to us to find out.
This little girl was supposedly being homeschooled, and apparently in North Carolina, there's no checkups. Nobody stopped by, no teacher, no social worker.
Nan is a wonderful lady. I had no reason not to trust Nan, and I knew Erica wanted to stay there and did not want to come back here.
Welcome to True Crime Brewery. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick. Good evening, folks.
Today's episode, Yesterday's Child, the story of Erica Lynn Parsons. Now, Erica Lynn Parsons was reported missing by her adoptive brother on July 30th, 2013. It had been 20 months since he last saw her at their home in Salisbury, North Carolina, on November 19th, 2011. He told police that whenever he asked his parents where Erica was, they just told him that she was off staying with relatives. Now, parents Casey and Sandy Parsons have five biological children in addition to Erica. Casey Parsons, the adoptive mother, said that Erica went to live with her paternal biological grandmother, a woman named Irene Nan Goodman, in Asheville, North Carolina. But she was not able to produce a telephone number or an address for Nan. Authorities haven't been able to find evidence that Nan even exists. Members of Erica's extended family believe Erica may be dead. Authorities also believe that foul play is involved in Erica's case. So there's a complicated and disturbing history in Erica's life. And after poring over hundreds of pages of information and listening to interviews with family members from the past 3 years, we will share with you what we know, and Dick will contribute knowledge on developmental disabilities and childhood abuse. And we will discuss the probable outcomes also in Erica's case. But before we get too much into it, let's get our beer review.
On to the beer.
Yes.
So this occurred in North Carolina.
It did.
So I have a North Carolina beer.
Good boy.
And this is a brew from Pisgah Brewing Company. I always liked that name, so I picked this beer. It's called Rouge. And it's an American wild ale. So wild ales are beers that are introduced to wild yeast or bacteria, such as Brettanomyces, Pediococcus, or Lactobacillus. This introduction may occur from previously inoculated oak barrels or from the yeast or bacteria being pitched into the beer. They often leave a fairly funky calling card.
Okay.
It's variously described as sour, tart, or more evocative, barnyard.
Mm-hmm. I've had those kind of beers. I like them.
So, but it can be a quite strange taste, a quite interesting taste. Many like it, many don't like it.
Sure.
So this particular one, Rouge, is a murky brown color, and it's got a vinegary, sour-type aroma with some brown sugar, molasses, and sweet fruit.
That sounds a little weird. Is it good?
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I've had a few American wild ales, and this certainly isn't among my huge favorites. It's probably middle of the pack. It has a kind of a tart cherry taste with an undercurrent of brown sugar, molasses, and dark bread. So I think it tasted better than the aroma was signaling. It's kind of carbonated, kind of tickle your nose, goes from tart to sweet. Pretty nice.
Okay.
Not great.
Not great. Okay, but pretty nice.
Pretty nice.
It's worth buying and drinking?
I would.
Okay. All right. So I'm not going to do any five-star reviews, but I did want to just say to everyone that we received many, many emails from people in Australia saying that they don't really drink Fosters. So although it's Australian for beer, it's not something that they drink on a regular basis, and they're not really proud of it, I guess, because they all wanted, everyone that wrote to us really wanted to make it clear that they don't drink it there.
They were quite adamant about that.
They were separating themselves from it.
Yes. Nobody in Australia likes Foster's.
No, not from what we heard.
But then the reason I reviewed it in that, you notice that I first reviewed a better Australian beer.
Sure, yeah.
Some IPA that was pretty good. But I did Foster's because everyone in the United States, anyway, associates Foster's with Australia.
Right.
So that's why I did it.
Right. So they're just trying to tell us that that's not really how it is there.
We stand corrected.
One of our listeners actually said that they send it overseas to get rid of it because they don't want to drink it. Just so we got that out there so everybody knows. So, Dick, let's take our snifters.
Got it.
And let's head on down to that quiet end there.
Let's go sit and talk.
It seems cooler down there, too. There's a window open, a nice breeze on a nice cool night like tonight.
Yes, it's better than the heat and humidity we've been having. So
okay.
Should be more pleasant.
I think so. So let's go down there and talk.
All right, let's go.
So, Erica Lynn Parsons. She was born on February 24th, 1998, to Carolyn Parsons. Now, Carolyn was separated from her husband, Steve. She had three other children also. Erica's biological father was Billy Dean Goodman, a man whom Carolyn was not in a relationship with at the time of Erica's birth, and she gave up Erica for adoption in 2000. Now, Sandy Parsons was Steve Parsons' brother, so Sandy and Casey Parsons were Erica's biological aunt and uncle when they adopted Erica when she was 2 years old.
So that's a complicated social history, don't you think?
Well, it's just starting out. It gets more complicated. But
so,
yes.
So she's separated from her husband, not divorced, just separated.
Right.
Has an affair with a guy,
mm-hmm.
or is seeing some guy, gets her pregnant.
Yes.
And they have a mutual decision that they don't want to be married or anything.
Well, I don't know if it's mutual or not, but they don't get married. They're not in a relationship.
And she doesn't feel capable of taking care of this new child.
No. I think she had a hard time taking care of the three that she had.
Probably.
Yeah.
And to the rescue, I wonder, I'd love to have heard that conference about how they decide who's going to take the new baby.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if they volunteered or they were asked to.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, they're siblings. The birth mother and the adoptive father are siblings.
Is that how it worked? Yes, right? Carolyn Parsons was Sandy Parsons' sister.
Right.
Right.
So maybe they just had a little talk.
No, but actually, Sandy Parsons was Steve Parsons' brother. So he was the husband's brother.
The husband who's not the father of the child.
Right. So they're not really biologically related at all. Yeah.
Okay.
So does that make sense?
No, it's weirder and weirder. Okay.
Okay, so Sandy Parsons was Steve Parsons' brother, and Sandy and Casey Parsons were Erica's biological, or I guess, would you call it biological if he's the brother of the husband, even though the husband's not the father?
Well, he's a brother-in-law of the
So woman. They were legally the aunt and uncle.
Yeah, I don't know about biologic, but that's okay. It's splitting hairs.
Yeah. So they adopted Erica when she was two, anyway.
2 years old?
2 years old.
Oh, so she was with mother for a while.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it wasn't like an immediate thing where the mother said at the birth that I can't take care of this kid.
I don't think so. Oh. I think she did have her for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So there's another thing I'd love to know. What led to the decision at age two that she no longer could care for the child?
Well, I wonder if there was maybe something going on with DHS at that point. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But something probably encouraged her to do that.
Something precipitated the decision to adopt her out.
I would imagine, yes.
Because otherwise, I mean, you had the kid for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not just keep it? Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, the return policy has expired.
Yeah, right. Well, I don't know. That I don't know.
No, it's just kind of strange.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it is.
At age two.
There are a lot of issues in the family, I think, clearly. A lot of issues.
There certainly seem to be.
Yeah. So shortly after Erica's adoption, there were already signs of trouble right away. So DSS investigated allegations of child abuse after receiving complaints that Casey whipped the toddler with a belt and bruised her. So she hadn't had the child very long when there were already allegations of child abuse against Erica.
Do we know who the complainant was?
It was relatives.
Relatives.
Yeah, there were at different times there were different relatives that complained.
Because this is an extended family. There's lots of relatives around.
It's a fairly good-sized family in the area, yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're very close. I don't think they were in the home very often.
No.
No.
But there was concerns pretty quickly that this child was being maltreated.
Absolutely, yes.
So did DSS find anything on their investigation?
No, the investigation failed to find evidence, so there have reportedly been multiple domestic violence calls at the house also. So over the years, the Parsons home has a record of domestic violence calls against Sandy and the oldest child, the one who reported Erica missing.
The one who reported her missing.
Yes, so he had some issues as well, and Casey and Sandy claim that their son James reported Erica missing out of spite because they'd made him move out of their home. So he was 20 years old when he reported her missing, and she would have been 15, and the last time she was seen, she was 13. But he did have this record of domestic violence, and he was arrested at least twice for assaulting various family members.
So he was a violent-prone person.
Seems that way.
And it seems like the mother also was
seems that
prone
way.
To violence.
Sure.
That's a great combination. And he was also probably violent against the other kids.
Well, yeah, James, when he reported Erica missing to the police, he actually admitted that he'd hit Erica. According to him, Erica was just physically abused by everyone in the house. She was kind of a punching bag. She'd been hit on the head. She had scabs on her head. She'd been locked in the closet. Just horrible things. And there were several relatives who told authorities Erica was mentally and physically abused on a regular basis, and that was particularly by Casey, though, the adoptive mother.
And I guess my question would be, they called DSS and nothing comes of that. Do they continue calling DSS or does DSS keep investigating? I mean, this
not enough, it seems.
Doesn't seem.
No, it seems like she was neglected and nobody was checking on her like they should have been.
Yeah.
So also according to James, Erica was kept isolated from the rest of the family and food was often withheld from her. She would be left in the closet to soil herself, and she would be dirty and incontinent or, you know, peeing in her pants. And she was just treated horribly. So he did admit that.
Jeez.
Yeah. So Casey, though, she allegedly told people in the family that she didn't like Erica, she couldn't stand to look at her, and didn't consider her her daughter. So Erica regularly was seen with bumps, bruises on her arms and legs, and Casey claimed that these were caused by the other children.
Sure. Blame the other guy.
Sure, but even if other children were beating her, why wouldn't you report that? And I wonder, was she seeing a physician? I know that she was taken out of school and supposedly homeschooled, so that made it so there was no one in the school to protect her or to see these things.
Well, I would wager that she wasn't seeing a physician.
I would probably agree with you. So when Erica was 6 years old, Casey sent her to live with a relative, I think that was her sister, because she no longer wanted to take care of her. So this relative, Robin Ashley, who was Casey's sister, said that Erica was very small for her age. She wore toddler-sized clothing. She did gain some weight while she was with Robin. But after 8 months, Casey came and took Erica back because she was afraid that DSS would find out Erica wasn't living with her, and the adoption assistance payments would stop.
So the reason for taking Erica back was purely financial.
Well, and I wonder if the original adoption, if the whole thing was purely financial.
Well, it sounds like. I mean, from day one, virtually, they were maltreating her.
It does, and it seems like Casey was the type of person who was always kind of scamming and manipulating to get money, from what we can see.
It does. We'll find more about that later.
Yeah. So, I don't know why the sister didn't say something at that point, though.
Yeah.
I don't know why the sister didn't
call. I don't know
call.
Either.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I can see where, because they continued to get state money while she was living with the aunt.
They did, and that's one of the reasons why they're in prison now.
And she said, oh, geez, I better get this kid back, because if the state finds out that she's not living here, I'm going to lose that money.
Right.
And I might have to pay him back what they've already paid.
Sure.
Bad stuff.
Right.
So they take her back. So she's almost 7 years old now.
Right. Yep. And she's being homeschooled. Now, in addition to this, Erica was learning disabled, and she had some hearing problems. But despite my best efforts, I haven't been able to find any school or any medical records for Erica. So I haven't been able to access those, and I don't know if there are many of them, if she was even seen by anyone in the school department with it for a diagnosis, or if she saw a physician, I don't know. I wasn't able to find anything on that.
Well, I have a possible diagnosis for Erica.
Yeah, I know you looked into it, so why don't you go ahead now and just share with us what you came up with.
If you want to go over that now.
Yeah, sure.
I was just struck looking at pictures of Erica, that she looks like children with fetal alcohol syndrome. And I'll just talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
But this is something that's a fairly recent diagnosis.
You didn't hear much about it in the past.
No.
No.
The effects of alcohol, blah, blah, blah. The effects of alcohol on the developing fetus were first described in 1968 by a French physician named Lemoyne.
Okay.
But this report was widely not well accepted.
How come?
People didn't think that the studies were rigorous enough.
Oh, okay.
But it got resurrected in 1973 by a doc in the United States named Ken Jones and some others. But Kenneth Jones is probably considered the father of fetal alcohol syndrome.
Okay.
So he described...
He was an American?
He's an American.
Okay.
He described significant findings in offspring of chronically alcoholic women. And interestingly, alcohol is now regarded as the most common teratogen to the developing fetus.
All right, just for everybody,
and
what is that?
A teratogen is the thing that causes harm to the fetus.
So a birth defect?
Drugs, viruses,
yeah.
Bacteria, things that can impact the fetus is called a teratogen.
Okay. And alcohol is among the top?
Alcohol is the most common.
Oh, the most,
to
okay.
Which the fetus is likely to be exposed.
Well, that makes sense because alcohol is commonly used.
Right. And it is dose related.
Oh, really?
So if you drink a lot, you're more likely to have a more severely affected infant. Mm-hmm. If you drink a little bit, it gets better in terms of the outcome.
But it also depends on what point in the pregnancy, right? Because what's developing?
Depends most commonly on when the brain is developing quickest.
And when's that?
First trimester.
Okay, so early on is more important than later.
Right.
Okay. Which is interesting because a lot of women might not know they're pregnant at that point.
That's true.
Yeah.
And, even though we know it's dose related, nobody can tell you what a safe dose is.
Right.
So the recommendation is don't drink.
Yeah.
Now, the flip side of that is probably by your 36th week of pregnancy, it's probably okay to have a drink here and there. But, we stick to the doctrine of don't drink at all during pregnancy.
Fair enough.
So the features of fetal alcohol syndrome are prenatal and postnatal growth deficiency. Now, I don't know if Erica was a small baby to begin with, but we certainly know she was small afterwards.
Right, right. So we don't know how much was neglect or how much was genetic.
They tend to have an average IQ of 60, so they're moderately delayed.
Right.
They can be very irritable as an infant, so that might have been one of the reasons why the birth mother had to give her up at age 2,
mm-hmm.
thinking. They tend to be hyperactive in childhood. They have mild to moderate small heads. They have eyes that aren't open that wide. Those are called short palpebral fissures.
And you think Erica has those in the pictures
she
we
does
saw?
In those pictures.
Okay.
The mid-face tends to be less well-developed, so it tends to be smaller looking. Again, that's how Erica appears. They tend to have a short nose. The little groove between the lip and the nose, called a philtrum, tends to be smooth. And they tend to have a very thin, smooth upper lip.
Huh.
And again, I think if you look at pictures of Erica, that fits her pretty well. So I'm thinking...
Yeah, you're right, it does.
...that she might have fetal alcohol syndrome, and that could certainly play a role in her outcome.
Well, kids with this, are they more likely... I imagine these kids are more likely to be abused than normal kids because they're difficult.
Yeah. Well, I'll go through some of the signs of child abuse and risk factors.
All right.
Down the road.
In due time.
In due time.
Okay.
So, but yes, certainly children that are developmentally delayed or small tend to be more likely abused.
Yeah. Okay, well, then let's just go ahead and talk a little bit about the Dr. Phil interview. Now, I'm not a big Dr. Phil fan, but this is a place where we get a lot of information on this case, so we did have to watch it.
So this is after she's been missing.
Yes, this was shortly after she was...
It's like a very short time after.
Shortly after the reporting, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
After the reporting, good point.
Yeah, because the missing and reporting are almost 2 years apart.
Yeah, and that just is mind-boggling.
Well, I mean, it's pretty sad that a kid could be missing that
long. A throwaway kid or something like this is just horrendous.
That's why I call it yesterday's child, because she was totally forgotten, I think.
No question.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it boggles my mind.
It's disgusting.
But Dr. Phil did a pretty good interview with him.
He did. So it was August 2013, and Erica's adopted parents did agree to appear on Dr. Phil's show. And Erica would have been 15 at this time. But they actually came on there, and they told Dr. Phil they weren't concerned about Erica. Casey insisted that Erica was in the care of her paternal grandmother, Nan. And Dr. Phil pointed out to them that detectives say Nan, whose real name is supposedly Irene Goodman, died 5 years ago. And they can find no records for a woman with that name that's connected to the biological family.
So there's likely to be nobody named Nan.
No, there was an Irene Goodman who was it Billy Dean Goodman, the biological father?
Right.
I think so. So this was the paternal grandmother, but she died.
But she died
many years ago.
Long before she allegedly took care of Erica.
Yeah, so Casey claimed that she left Erica at a McDonald's, so didn't even take her to the home, in December of 2011, so that her grandmother, Nan, could collect her there. So Nan wasn't even there when she dropped her at the McDonald's. She just dropped her there for Nan to pick up, she said. So that way she wasn't stuck having to give a description or a location, right?
Right.
And take her to Asheville, North Carolina, for a 3-week holiday visit. Now, according to Casey, this woman, Nan, initially made contact with them through Facebook, and Erica went to live with her for a few months. So there was this 3-week visit, and after Erica was with Nan for 2 months, Casey said, Nan said that Erica did not want to return home. And Casey actually spoke of a telephone conversation where Nan said Erica wanted to stay with her permanently. And Casey was like, oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not?
And supposedly she could hear Erica in the background on the phone that she said, I don't want to see that bitch anymore.
Right, right. Exactly. I don't want that bitch coming to my birthday party.
Yeah.
And Casey actually tried to cry. I didn't see any tears. And she said, that hurt a lot. That's the last time I heard from Erica. So even if by a wild stretch of the imagination, Erica went to live with her grandmother, why would you not visit her or call her for 20 months and think that's okay?
You're asking me that?
Yeah, I am.
That's a rhetorical question. Right?
Well, I'm trying to be reasonable beyond a reasonable doubt here.
It's inconceivable.
It is.
To me.
Yeah.
And I know an adoptive parent, but please, they're her parents.
Sure, they should.
They need to be looking out for her welfare. They need to be checking on her. They need to make sure that everything's okay with her. And it's like, she's gone, we're done with her.
Pretty much, if that's even what happened. So Casey claimed that Nan's phone was disconnected a few weeks later and that her Facebook profile was removed from the internet. Still, she said she was not concerned. So she had no address or any way to contact her daughter, but she was not worried because she knew Erica was safe. You know, and she made some comment like, Nan was just a wonderful woman, some bullshit like that.
Yeah, Nan, who she allegedly met, like, what, twice or something before turning her daughter over to her?
Yeah, so we're like 10 minutes into this interview, and I'm already thinking this woman's just a fucker. I just can't stand her.
Yeah.
Trying to be open-minded, trying to give every benefit of the doubt, but I just can't.
No, and her husband just sits there.
He pretty much just sits there.
He doesn't offer anything.
No, he says that Casey takes care of the parenting, and he just supports whatever she says.
Right.
Yeah, he's a greaseball.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. So, of course, there are phone records and there are ways to find deleted Facebook profiles. Duh.
Of course there are.
And the police have not been able to find any trace of this Nan, any phone calls or internet interactions between Casey and this Nan person.
So at least the story of communicating by Facebook is probably false, because there's no evidence that there was ever a Facebook account.
No, the whole thing seems false, yeah.
And they certainly can't find any phone records, so this is all kind of made up by Casey.
That seems That seems to be the only thing that makes sense. So, in this interview, Dr. Phil revealed a statement on Facebook by Erica's biological mother, Carolyn. So, Carolyn wrote on Facebook, "I am the birth mom. She has no family in Asheville. And I nor her dad have a clue where she is. And we love her and want to find her and know that she is safe."
It's also a bit ingenuous, too. I mean, she gave this kid up at age 2.
That's so true, but we could give her the benefit of the doubt and say that she thought she'd have a better life by giving her up for adoption.
Possibly. I'd love to know how often this birth mother checked on her when she was in the care of her adoptive parents.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to have to think that not a lot, but I really don't know enough to say.
Nothing I've read indicates that she was in any kind of frequent contact.
No, it seems like she'd only seen her twice, actually, in the past 5 years or so.
So, give me a break.
I know. It's just so sad. So, Casey and Sandy Parsons, back to Dr. Phil. Casey and Sandy Parsons, they agreed to take a polygraph test with Dr. Phil's expert. Sandy Parsons was considered strongly deceptive, so he was just asked two initial questions about, do you know where she is? Did you have anything to do with planning to get rid of her? And he failed right away.
He flunked both of those.
Yeah, so right there.
Right out of the starting blocks. Boom.
Yep. And I don't think that necessarily lie detectors are always right, but something like that to me seems like something's going on.
It doesn't sound like it's a shade of gray.
No, it sounds like it was totally black.
Sounds pretty black.
Yeah. Now here's the, I'd say funny, but it's not funny. Casey Parsons, she claimed to have pain of a 9 on the 1 to 10 pain scale, with 10 being the worst pain you can imagine. Because the pain response can skew the polygraph results, she was asked to take her pain medication and return for the test the next day when she was more comfortable.
And she agreed to that initially.
I don't know. She didn't come back.
But she didn't return.
She ended up refusing and not returning.
Yeah.
So, actually, it was a two-parter on Dr. Phil.
Yeah, I thought Dr. Phil advertised or said that tomorrow Sandy would be back. Not Sandy, Casey would be back.
Well, Sandy and Casey, I think. But neither parent returned the next day as planned to discuss the results of Sandy's polygraph. So, Dr. Phil ended up talking to the polygraph expert who explained how Sandy's was strongly deceptive.
Right.
And that's really all they could do because Casey didn't take it.
And they weren't back for their re-interview.
No, they actually went back to North Carolina at that point. So investigators, they obtained a search warrant for the Parsons Salisbury, North Carolina home in August of 2013. So shortly after the interview, the home is being searched. And when the home's searched, they found red-stained drywall and baseboards. They found two large knives, which they removed from the home, and other things removed included a book detailing the disappearance of JonBenet Ramsey, which contained notes about home remodeling. So I'm not sure if these were notes about what the home remodeling was about, if it's to cover something up. That's what was implied to me.
Yeah, I think the implication is that the reading material and the home improvement books somehow implicate them in the disappearance of the child.
Well, I guess the one book wouldn't, but then they found a plastic bag that was filled with magazines that all had JonBenet on the cover. That had articles about the JonBenet Ramsey case.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could argue that they were just fixated on that case.
Yeah,
generated a lot of publicity.
And then they have a young girl in their house that goes missing?
Well,
what are the odds?
Small,
I would think. So also, laptops, cell phones, and their desktop computer were removed by the police during this search. And also, thank goodness, DSS removed the two youngest of the Parsons' children from their home at that point and sent them to live with a relative, hopefully a good relative.
Right.
Yeah.
That still leaves, the oldest is gone because he's the one that blew the whistle.
Yeah.
What about the other two? They had five kids, right?
Yeah, I think there were three older and two younger than Erica.
They took the younger ones out because they were most at risk.
Yeah, they might have been the only ones living at home. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay.
It kind of seems that way. So in January 2014, there were multiple court hearings on Casey and Sandy's parental fitness, and a judge told them basically that they would not regain custody of their other children until they produced Erica, came to court and said, here's Erica, we found her.
And that hasn't occurred yet, has it?
No, and I'm afraid that it won't.
I'd be very amazed if it did.
Sure. So in July 2014, a year after Erica was reported missing, Casey and Sandy were charged with 76 federal counts, including tax fraud, mail fraud, theft of funds, and conspiracy. They had accepted over $12,000 in adoption assistance payments for Erica's care after the point that she went missing, and they had listed her as a member of their household during this time, and they had applied for other forms of government benefits at that point, so I don't know if that was food stamps or Medicaid or what, but they'd applied for something like that with her name as a dependent on it.
Sure.
Even though she was gone.
Right.
So they also claimed her as a dependent on their tax return.
Crazy stuff.
So Casey, she pleaded guilty to 16 charges in October of 2014, and later that month, Sandy was convicted of all the charges against him.
So how long are they in prison?
In March of 2015, Casey was sentenced to 10 years, and Sandy was sentenced to 8 years. So also the sentencing judge said the case had troubled him more than anything in his entire career, and he called them morally bankrupt.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I know he was referring not just to the theft of money, but to the treatment of the child.
No, he actually said that they knew where she was and they were responsible for her disappearance.
Right.
That he couldn't prove what they did, but he knew that they did something.
Yeah. Which is, it's interesting to me, because all he's adjudicating, is the fraud charges.
Yes.
And he took it upon himself to bring up the disappearance of the child.
Well, yeah. I mean, where is Erica?
She's still not around.
How do you say that she went to a relative's, but you have no address, no phone number, no proof that you even spoke to this person? And also, I didn't mention that all of Erica's things were at home. None of her clothes or anything had gone with her, so.
Because Nan was going to buy her all new clothes.
Well, yeah, Nan had more money, and that's why Erica wanted to stay with Nan. They had horses and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you want to talk a little bit about the child abuse now?
Sure.
Okay.
And then we can talk some more about the case, because it's just, I'm just wondering why an arrest hasn't been made.
Well, I don't think they have any proof that they killed her. But I don't know why they haven't been convicted of, there must be some kind of law against, there must be a criminal neglect charge or something.
Well, it seems to be something that they could do.
Yeah.
The red stuff on the floorboards was found not to be human blood?
I don't know. I don't think that's ever been released, what it was.
I mean, if it was.
Casey claimed that it was rodent blood or something, but I haven't found any official reports on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if it's a small amount of blood, you can't take that as proof of a murder.
No, you can't. I mean, you can just use it as one more bit of evidence.
Sure.
And what about the shed that got searched on the grandparents' lot?
Okay, well, I hadn't gotten to that yet.
Oh, I'll leave that. So you want to do...
I just wanted you to give me some background on child abuse with... You had something on kids with developmental disabilities and child abuse.
Well,
I just wanted to hear about that a little bit.
This will be quick. I don't want people to get too tired about this subject. That is just a revolting subject. So,
well, it's revolting, but I'm sure people want to know something about it. I do.
All right. In the latest studies on child abuse as of 2014, over 3.5 million children subjects of child maltreatment reports. This is in the year 2014.
In where? In the United States?
In the United States.
Okay.
Now, of these 3.5 million, 700,000 were found to have evidence of maltreatment. This translates to an annual victimization rate of 9.4 per 1,000 children.
So about 1%.
About 1%.
So 1 out of 100.
Yeah. Now, neglect is the most common form of child maltreatment. So physical abuse is a small percentage. About 75 to 80% of maltreatment is neglect, and only 5 to 10% is physical abuse.
Okay.
And most of the time, over 80% of the time, a parent is the perpetrator.
Okay.
Which I think we knew anyway. So there's some risk factors. On the parent side, risk factors include substance abuse, violence in the home, single parent, teenage parent, a non-related adult in the home. Those are all risk factors for child abuse.
Yeah, you often hear about the single mother's boyfriend. That's
boyfriend.
What you hear about all the time.
Yeah. So, and it's the single mother who's 19 years old.
That would be worse.
With the boyfriend.
Which I think we did talk about this a little bit when we did Ayla Reynolds' case. Because she had young parents.
She did.
Yeah.
With a bunch of risk factors. And then risk factors on the child's part would include prematurity, low birth weight, drug exposure in utero, and developmental or physical disability. So I think there's several risk factors involved in this family and in Erica.
Yeah, a combination of things came together for
right.
a bad situation.
No question.
Yeah. So I wonder if she'd stayed with her biological mother, if her life would have been a lot better. Who knows?
Who knows?
We tend to think that her mother was an alcoholic or drank during the pregnancy. That's what you're implying with saying fetal alcohol syndrome.
I'm implying that.
Yeah.
And in that case, she might not have had such a great life staying at the house, in the home.
And that's what the biological mother, Carolyn, said, is that she thought that Erica would have a better life with Sandy and Casey. Actually, I think the biological mother had spent some time in foster homes, so she didn't want her daughter to end up in foster homes.
Okay.
But this seems worse than a foster home, obviously.
Huh. This is a torture chamber.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Sandy Parsons, the adoptive father, his parents owned the home in Salisbury, where Casey and Sandy lived with the children. And at first, they tried to be supportive of their son, but they did finally become very suspicious of Sandy and Casey's behavior.
Well, yeah, because they couldn't provide any answers to the questions.
Right. Now, Sandy's parents evicted the couple in late 2013 due to failure to pay rent, taxes, and utilities, as they had agreed. And Sandy's father on the local news admitted that a big part of his reasoning for evicting them was because of what they did to Erica. So they did come around to thinking that.
So they're thinking that they did something.
That they did something to Erica, yes.
Something bad.
And Casey's parents have ended up feeling the same way as well.
So both sets of grandparents suspect them.
Yeah, now I don't know why the grandparents didn't say something sooner when they didn't see her for so long. They did claim that Casey kept telling them that Erica was staying with family. But if you don't see a kid for a year and you're living in the same state.
Yeah, you know. I mean, there's so many places this falls down. People should have done something, it seems.
It seems. I mean, what about this homeschooling thing? Nobody checked at the house. And this Casey, I do not think she has a college degree or any certificate for teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But is there some agency that oversees people that do homeschooling?
Well, there might be, but what I heard is that there are 52,000 homeschools with 5 people supervising them from the state.
This is in North Carolina.
Yes.
There's 50,000 homeschools.
Well, I don't know if it was the whole state or if it was the county.
Whole state.
Whole state.
God.
Okay. Well, they said they have 5 people that are responsible for overlooking these, which doesn't seem anywhere near adequate. So no one had visited the home.
So that's each person has 10,000. Homeschools,
yeah,
to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do it.
Well, no, and so their home was actually called the Parsons Christian School.
Of course it was.
And she was the administrator, the teacher, everything.
Yeah, but it sounds like all you have to do is make up a name for yourself and say you're a homeschool.
It does sound that way, which to me is shocking. I thought there was some kind of oversight. But there
apparently very little.
So even in a home where they're not being abused, they could very easily not be getting an education, and definitely not a good education, unless they have parents who are exceptional, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's upsetting. I don't know why that's allowed to go on. It can't be the only state with this issue.
No, I don't know what the situation is in Maine, where we live.
I don't either.
I know that you have to have a curriculum, and you have to show it to people.
Show it to who?
Some person from the state.
Okay.
Somebody has to approve the curriculum that you're teaching.
Yeah, that wasn't mentioned at all in this story.
So, I guess Maine does have a little bit of oversight. I don't know how much.
Yeah, well, you know, not only do Sandy's parents believe the couple's responsible for Erica's disappearance, but Casey's parents do as well, and Casey's mother has said she doesn't want anything to do with her, and she doesn't want the children going back to her, the other two children.
Right. They're the people who have custody of the two youngest right now.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Casey has this history of unethical and illegal behavior. Back in the early 2000s, she became a surrogate mother for an infertile couple, and after she received the money from the couple, she told them she had a miscarriage. And then the couple investigated to see what was going on, and they found out that Casey was still pregnant, and she'd been in contact with three other couples for paid adoptions of this baby.
Oh, good scam.
Yeah. And the baby belonged to the couple. It was his sperm and her egg in Casey's uterus.
Okay.
So fortunately, the couple was able to get custody of their infant, and they do have that child.
And they have that child.
Thank God, yeah.
But that would make it possible that Casey was trying to sell Erica.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's going to buy a 13-year-old with developmental disabilities, though, unless it's for evil purposes.
I mean, I guess the best thing you could think was that that's what happened. I personally think that they killed her.
I think or most she people killed think her. That. Yeah. I kind of feel like Casey killed her and the husband is helping to cover that up.
Yeah, I would believe that.
I think she'd been abused for years and the mother went overboard and ended up killing her.
Yeah.
Or they planned to kill her. Who knows? Because this couple is morally bankrupt.
I don't have anything good to say about them.
No. And from this surrogate case, you can see that she had no problem using children for financial gain.
Right.
She kept collecting the checks when Erica wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So let's play devil's advocate and say there was a nan, and Erica wanted to go stay with her.
Okay.
And Casey didn't get to really look into where Nan lived or anything. So even if you believe all that, who would send their daughter to live with someone and not have any contact? Even if she was going to live with somebody else, why wouldn't there be contact?
Right.
And why would she continue to accept money?
Well, there's so many things that just stretch the bonds of credibility. You cannot believe that story.
No. No, it's not believable at all.
No, not in the least.
So if you think, could Casey have sold Erica? What are the possibilities there?
Well, as you said, who's going to want to take over a teenage, developmentally delayed girl?
Right. And they could have tried to pass her off for younger, I guess, but still.
No.
No, that doesn't seem likely. So all I can think is that Casey probably killed her and her husband helped her to cover it up. But if that's the case, why haven't they found her body? These aren't geniuses.
No, they aren't, but I guess there's probably plenty of places to hide a body.
You think so?
Sure.
Okay.
And maybe it's somewhere in the house.
In the house?
Well, they had the remodeling books.
Well, they did. And the authorities actually dug up the back deck. They took that apart and looked under there. Oh, and then there was a search of the shed that you brought up earlier. So that was in the back of Sandy's parents' house. There was a shed that Sandy had used for storage.
Right.
Right.
Sandy and Casey used it, and it was kept locked.
Right.
So Sandy's parents couldn't get into it.
Right, but then they said the police could search it.
Yeah.
Because they seemed fairly decent. They seemed like they wanted to go with the law and what was going on.
Yeah, they're trying to do the right thing.
So they have it searched, and what'd they find it? They found a hammer.
A hammer.
Some school records.
But not Erica's.
No, the parents.
Parents' school records.
Which is weird.
Some teeth.
Yeah, teeth in a box. So yeah. I don't know if those were baby teeth or bizarre.
I mean, nothing's ever mentioned further of that. So my thinking is if they felt like they were Erica's teeth. Something would have been said.
Well, maybe. I don't know. Why would you keep, if you're keeping your children's baby teeth, why would you put them in a shed at your in-law's house too, though? That's weird.
I don't know.
So I don't know. That was very bizarre. There was some blood on the hammer, and this is blood that also Casey claimed was rodent blood. And I don't know where she got that information, but I haven't found anything to back that up.
No.
No. So in 2015, there was a news conference with the FBI where they brought forward that they had a $25,000 reward for any information leading to finding Erica. But they also said in the same time that they didn't believe she was alive.
Right.
So the local police and the FBI don't think she's alive, but they have no proof that she isn't.
Exactly.
No definitive proof anyway.
Yeah, just a supposition.
Right. So.
So they gotta wait till somebody rats out the other one.
Well, it kind of seems that way, but actually, James did tell the police at one point that his parents killed Erica and buried her in the backyard.
Right.
So there was some talk of digging up the whole backyard, but I haven't heard of that happening.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much they believe James's story, because he certainly had an axe to grind.
Yes, and what if he hadn't gone to the police? Would anyone have noticed? Are there children that just go missing and no one ever knows? It's creepy.
It is creepy. I would bet you, since nothing had happened for almost 2 years, that if he hadn't said anything, nothing still would have been said.
I think you're right. That's really bad.
It's horrible.
So there was another briefing with the FBI a couple months ago, and pretty much the same thing. They're offering a reward, and they need more information, and they don't believe that she's alive, but they don't have any proof that she isn't.
Yep.
So we're kind of left where we started out. Now, they did find things in the house that they thought enough of to take out and take to the police station as evidence, but I guess not enough to bring a case against them.
Nope, not yet. Because they would have arrested him.
Well, yeah. So Casey and Sandy are in prison. They have both appealed. Did I write that down? Yeah, both parents have appealed their sentences. And just recently, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected Sandy's appeal. That was just in June. So now the FBI is offering a $50,000 reward. If you have any information on Erica Lynn Parsons, you can call the Rowan County Sheriff's Office. And that's at 1-704-216-8700. Or you can just submit the info online to the FBI at fbi.tips.gov. So Erica would actually be 18 years old now, and she was only 13 when her extended family saw her last. Of course, Casey claims that the last time she saw her was December 2011 when she took her to the McDonald's.
Right, dropped her off to meet Nan.
Right. So even at that time, she was 4'5" tall and weighed 85 pounds, so she was tiny.
She was very petite.
And I don't know. I guess you said that could be from her diagnosis. But it could also be from neglect and not being fed properly.
Well, if she was malnourished, that could certainly do it too.
So it doesn't seem like they're super responsive when people complained of the abuse. It said they came to the house but didn't find any, but I wonder, how long did it take them to come to the house?
Yeah.
Because if they saw bumps and bruises, why didn't protective services see the bumps and bruises?
Well, either there was a length of time between the report and the visit, so things improved, or maybe they somehow hid her away someplace and they never actually saw her.
No, they saw her. I mean, if there's an abuse complaint and then they come and you can't produce the child, I would imagine that would really set off alarms.
Well, could they produce another child and claim it was Erica?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
I mean, I think there's lots of ways to beat that system unless there's some real huge, horrendous, obvious injuries.
Yeah, I guess.
Yep.
I mean, what does it take?
I think people should have kept complaining. If they have evidence or ideas that the child was continuing to be abused, they should have been reported.
Well, I know. And the grandparents didn't report anything, although they kept asking where she was, and they seemed to care about her.
Yeah.
So that's strange.
No, there was a total breakdown.
Yeah. So I don't know where the breakdown is. I'm thinking of when she was first adopted. How did the adoption take place? Don't they have to do some kind of examination of the people that are going to adopt? Or because they're relatives, is that not applicable, I wonder?
I don't know. I think for an older child.
She was 2.
an intra-family adoption.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call that an older child, a two-year-old.
Well, it's not an infant.
No, but it's not an infant, but it's a baby.
Yeah, but it's an intra-family adoption. Maybe the rules are bent a little bit. Or maybe it was, well, it had to have been something official because the adoptive family was getting state money.
Oh, yeah, they legally adopted her, for sure. They were the legal parents.
So what do you have to do to get
them? I don't know. I thought that there was quite a bit to it, but it doesn't seem like it.
Nah. I think someone visits the home and it looks clean and it looks neat and there's other kids and they say, okay, this is a good home to be in.
Gosh, I just don't. I'm not impressed. I'm not impressed with that. I'm not impressed with the schooling. Why aren't there any kind of parameters, any kind of rules about this? I don't get it. So she's adopted and homeschooled, and nobody's checking on any of it.
And the only reason they checked was because there were reports of abuse.
Yeah, but they must not have done much of a check because they didn't find any evidence.
And they checked and said, okay, it's all right. And then they never get called again.
But don't you think if you get that report, you'd check more than once? You'd come back and check periodically?
Not necessarily.
Well, geez, they should.
They're overworked.
Wow.
So you make a visit and you determine that it's a okay home and there's no evidence of abuse and you close the case unless someone else calls again.
But what about the homeschooling? How was she going to get a degree? Is she just because the mom says it's Parsons Christian School and says she graduates? How would we know she even got an education?
We wouldn't.
That's just horrifying to me. I just think that's a huge failure. That's just letting this kid down completely. This kid didn't have a chance. Nobody was looking out for her.
No one.
No. Okay. Well, her biological mother did attend several vigils that the neighbors had. So there are a lot of people in the community that there's a Facebook site. There are vigils that have been held. These Facebook groups have been developed to share information and support the search for answers in Erica's case. And as I said, the FBI is offering a $50,000 reward, but that's about it. There's really nothing else happening.
It doesn't look like anything's going to happen.
I don't see how it's going to, because the home has been searched, the parents are in prison.
The only way is for Sandy to say, Casey did it.
Yeah, I can't imagine that happening.
Nope.
I wonder if they offered him a deal that he could get out early if he did say anything. That would be a smart thing to do.
Maybe they should try that.
Well, I think that if they were going to, they would have by now.
Probably.
Okay. Well, the kids are being raised by someone else anyway, the two younger kids, so that's a good thing.
Sounds like they're in a good situation.
Yeah, so, well, at least these people aren't allowed to...
A better situation.
I wonder what would happen if they were to try and have more kids when they got out of prison. Adopt or become foster parents. Would that be allowed, I wonder?
I would bet that as convicted felons, they wouldn't be allowed to adopt.
You think so?
I would think so.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Of course, nothing would keep them from having a child themselves.
Well, I think they're too old for that.
I mean, James is what, 20-something?
Yeah, and Casey had had gastric bypass surgery, and then she'd had all these surgeries after that. That's why she claimed to be in pain at the Dr. Phil show. She'd had a surgery within a month or so. But I can't believe she had pain of a 9 when she's sitting on the show talking.
Right. Talking and it looks like she's speaking free of pain. She's pretty comfortable.
She seems comfortable, although she might be a little uncomfortable because she's lying her ass off.
Yeah, but she doesn't look like she's in severe pain.
Well, I wonder if she knew before she went that you don't have to take it if you're in pain, or if she just kind of jumped on that as soon as they asked. She said, oh.
Yeah, don't you?
I think so.
Because it's one thing to say, sure, I'll take a lie detector test, and then you have to actually do it. She wasn't going to do it.
No.
I don't think. I mean, if her husband answers 2 questions and fails both of them.
Right.
She's not going to pass.
Well, no, probably not.
So.
Yeah. So I don't know. But there is, if you want any more information, you can look on these Facebook groups or on the FBI website to find out some more. I think a lot of my information came from the local news and the Dr. Phil show. That was the bulk of the information I was able to find on Erica.
Right. Yeah, those are pretty good.
Pretty good.
Sources.
Yeah, I thought so. Okay, I guess that's it. We're wrapping it up. Do you have any other comments?
I have no other comments.
So this weekend we're going to be doing a new experiment. It is our On True Crime movie that we're going to do. So we're going to podcast about the movie Unfaithful, starring Diane Lane and Richard Gere. So that should be fun. We'll see how that goes.
We'll see how it goes.
At least we don't have to do much research.
No, we're just going to watch the movie again.
Yeah. and talk about it.
And talk about it.
We'll probably do a bit of a recap, but not, you know, not scene by scene. We'll just kind of talk about what the story's about.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun.
It will be.
Yeah. So if you want any more information about Tiger Abber Podcasts or True Crime Brewery, go to our website, www.tigerabber.com, and follow us on Twitter at Tiger Abber Pods, and you can find out all you need to know about True Crime Brewery, Tiger Abber Podcasts, and Team Tiger Abber. A lot of people have joined Team Tiger Abber. And we have coasters, we have stickers, and we have snifters available.
Don't forget the snifters.
That's right. So until next time, we'll talk to you next time at the quiet end.
We'll see you then.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.